Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gabe.
We tend to begin this show with listener emails. That's what we're going to do again this time, with the caveat that we had so many. I guess that's the announcement. We've reached a point where I'm not sure we can even read all the emails that come in.
Most of them this time came from Canadian listeners.
Yeah, because I messed up. I made a mistake.
Hold. I knew that you messed up. I knew it. And either I'm just too lazy, or I can't remember why exactly I didn't correct you, but it was your pronunciation of the city of.
I called it. Okay, let me say it badly first. Mm-hmm. I called it. I could only assume it was called Regina or Regina.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I said Regina. R-E-G-I-N-A.
I think you said Regina.
Did I say Regina?
Or Regina.
Okay, one of those.
Here's what you should have said. Regina. Connor, let me take you back to when I was 12 years old. My dad and mom rented a recreational vehicle, and we drove from Wisconsin via Manitoba to Calgary, or a little bit further. But on that road, in the Saskatchewan Plains, you go through the town of Regina. You also go through the towns of Swift Current, Moose Jaw, Medicine Hat.
Those are amazing.
And I couldn't believe driving along. First of all, it takes hours and hours and hours on this road. But you pass through these towns. I can't believe how awesome they are. Medicine Hat.
The names. Yeah.
But also, last but not least, Regina. The brain of a 12-year-old passing through the town of Regina and thinking about what it must be like to live there. You're constantly saying this word, Regina, and it sounds like
something else. Yeah. Here's one of the dozens of emails we got about this particular mispronunciation. This is from Christina. She said, one of the funniest things about Regina. It's so hard for me to say that.
That's why I didn't correct you.
I
didn't want to say the word.
I understand why you allowed me to follow my own sword there.
You never make mistakes. And
Thank you
made
for
a
that.
Little one there.
Thank you for that lie. One of the funniest things about Regina, Saskatchewan is how it's pronounced. One of your listeners wrote in about the horses and milk delivery, and they were from Regina. It's pronounced Regina, like vagina. Never gets old. Ha ha. Christina was born in Saskatoon, she says. So to all of our listeners out there, thank you for that correction. I kind of still feel like I want to just avoid talking about that town or city for the rest of my life. It just sounds... It's hard to say.
I'm sorry for the people who live there, or maybe they don't care now.
Or it's a source of pride. A lot of laughter over that one. That was just one of the many emails, Gabe. You got another one.
This one here's from Stephanie. Really love your podcast and all of your interesting topics. You left the conversation with a very popular, in parentheses, that's why we are in this mess, negative narrative of people having children. Like it's purely a numbers game where more people only equals more problems.
Oh, and real quick, let me jump in just to remind our listeners, or to tell those who didn't listen to that episode, we talked to somebody from the Max Planck Institute for Demographic Research, and the topic was, why are people in developed countries around the world having fewer and fewer babies, and why does it seem like there's nothing that can stop that from happening?
Stephanie goes on, this narrative is why the birth rate is declining, and it completely ignores the best, best thing about people, our ability to grow and adapt. Human flourishing has brought us this far. It's ridiculous to assume we cannot go further. We learn new things, again, all the caps, all the time. The perfect example appeared just moments earlier in your podcast. Gabe now knows he should eat more eggs.
Yes, you should.
Yeah. And again, a lot of emails came in pointing out a mistake I made. I didn't mention that the health benefits or the cardiovascular benefits you get from eating up to 6 eggs a week is compared to people who eat essentially no eggs.
Last thing, real quick, thank you to Loretta who wrote in as well. This is about artificial intelligence. And she says, I'm going to paraphrase, she's fearful of it, but she wants us. There were a lot of emails saying, please do keep covering artificial intelligence. It's important, even if it's a bit dry or technical sometimes. And her particular hope is that AI will, it started to, but that it will continue to revolutionize healthcare, mm-hmm. and that in the future you may be interacting with a largely artificially intelligent system to understand your illnesses and ailments. Mm-hmm. She finished up by asking, could you do a future story segment on whether or not such a thing currently exists and what might be the downsides? Yes, we will. I've been compiling, I've got this long list of all the ways that AI tools are already improving like oncology screenings, so better than human doctors at figuring out whether or not you have breast cancer, for example. And at some point we will do a special on that. So that is coming. Loretta, thank you for that email.
First idea we're going to look into this week is what having depressive symptoms could, that what effect that could have on what party you vote for. The political party you vote for. And the reason why I like this study is that it was there were complete open questions. The researchers didn't say why they think this happened, simply just this happened. Just the fact that this happened. And they were looking in Britain, the Netherlands, and Spain. So surveys in those three countries asking people what party you feel closest to, what party you are going to vote for if there were an election right now, what party you would vote for, and are you suffering from depressive symptoms? And those were, are you sad? Are you down? How are you sleeping? What's your energy level? And if you're suffering from depressive symptoms, it's just a simple fact, according to this research, that you are more likely to vote for a different party than the one you feel closest to.
No matter where your baseline is, party A, B, C, D, E, F, G, if I'm D or if I'm B and then I'm suffering depressive symptoms, I will go away from that party and vote for a party similar to it, but not the same?
A different party. That's it. A different party. And it's statistically significant. So up to 23 percentage points of probability to defect from that party that you feel closest to. If there were election right now, you would vote for a different party. Now, like I said at the beginning, there are open questions. They didn't look into why. It's just the fact that it will happen. If you are suffering from depression, the likelihood that you will vote for a different party at the next election is simply higher.
There's some intuitive logic there, right? If I'm in an organization and I'm frustrated with, or sorry, no, not even frustrated. The leadership is there. They're doing a good job, a bad job, or right in the middle. Doesn't matter. And yet I feel down. Then I would attach possibly those feelings to that leadership and hence turn and look for different leadership.
Why not? That's the phenomenon of defection, to defect, to go away from something that you generally feel loyal to.
It's just a really powerful word to use politically, like voting.
Yeah.
Oh, are you voting for? No, I actually defected.
Yeah.
I'm defecting this time.
Well, I mean, it is a very, very important topic, because think about in Germany right now, according to the major insurers, they do a health atlas every year. And right now, 12.5% of Germans are suffering from depression, clinical depression. And there's a big time election coming up at the end of this month. What will that mean? If 12.5% of voters, if all those ones who are suffering from depression go out and vote, which is a completely different question that has been looked into. What does depression do to voter turnout? What effect will that have?
Yeah. Yeah. At the very least, based on this study, the higher the national level of depression, the higher number of people are likely to vote for a non-mainstream. Well, I can't
a
even say that.
Party.
A different.
A different
yeah, just a different. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Yep. Yeah, we'll limit it to that because that's what the paper says. I'll move on to something else here. Gabe, have you heard anyone say this? This seems like a pretty new thing to be saying.
Yeah.
And I've heard it. I've seen it a lot on the internet, more on the internet than I've heard it. Somebody talking about getting the ick. Yeah, the ick. Have you heard someone say that?
Not that exact word. But that emotion or that feeling, yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
This is a sudden and visceral aversion to a romantic partner. That's how it's being used.
Okay. So referring to the person that they're going out with or the person that they're close to right now or in a relationship with.
Ugh. Yeah. Or not even necessarily with. They might be thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about getting together with him and then, I don't know, I just kind of got, I got the ick. That's how you use it. That's how I've heard it. That's how I've seen it online. And it feels relatively new. It's a new way to describe something that we all kind of intuitively understand. But what is it exactly? What is it? And that's what this study is about.
What is it?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to get to, man.
Come on, man.
Well, first of all, I'm going to debunk what I said 2 seconds ago. about it being new. I thought it was new. It's not new. The authors of the paper have a couple of examples right in the top to make it clear this has been happening since the mid-1990s. And that confirms, I went to Google Ngram because I was like, when did people start saying ick like that? I'll give you this graph, Gabe.
To me, to be fair, Connor, the mid-90s feels like yesterday, so.
It was not. That graph makes it clear. It happened in the mid-90s.
And then it just went straight up. So this is a graph. There are a couple of little uptakes between 1880 and 1980, but then in the mid-90s, yeah. Boom, goes straight up.
Yeah, and there was one, they have quite a few examples. One in particular, I think, may have caused that. It was an episode the study is from just outside of Los Angeles, California, in the United States. So a lot of the cultural references here are from the U.S., but they are international as well.
Yeah.
From the TV show Friends.
I'll be there for you.
It did include that song, yeah. And so there was one episode in season one called The One with the Ick Factor. And this is where Monica, one of the characters in the show, she hooks up with a guy and they're laying in bed after doing the deed. And he's got this hairy chest and he looks like he's an older guy. And he goes on to tell her that he's a senior, but not at university. He's a senior in high school. And this gives her the ick. This is like, what have I done? She's instantly, viscerally disgusted by him. This fact. It doesn't matter. She liked him before. She hooked up with him.
Possibly because if he's in high school, this might be statutory rape?
The show doesn't frame it that way, but yes, obviously. But yeah. She's more disgusted with this fact. It revolts her. So she's turned off. It's done. There's another example they give. I wish I could play this for you, but it would be against copyright. Jerry Seinfeld in the TV show Seinfeld. He goes on a date with a woman. Every time they cut away from her and her hands reach to do something, they've clearly used a male actor who does a lot of work. He's got those really thick.
I know the term for this. Man hands.
Yeah, that was the show. And so she breaks some bread for him and you see these man hands. She gets an eyelash off his cheek and these gigantic man hands. And so Jerry Seinfeld developed the ick. Apparently there was Sex in the City, a show I didn't watch, but Carrie at one point hooks up with a guy and then afterwards he writes and plays a love song for her. She gets the ick. This is the ick. This is what we're discussing today. But again, they're all like, to get more concretely in line with the way people use it today, the researchers did two things. First of all, they went to TikTok and they looked for the hashtag the ick. They looked for the easiest way to find out who's talking about this and what are they saying. And so they looked at 84 videos. It's not too many videos, to be honest, but more than 3 million views. So these videos have been seen quite a lot. And then they went through and they categorically listed what are they talking about when they talk about the ick. And it was very different for women and men. I'll go through the list that they compiled. For women, the highest percentage of, or the one that was most frequent for when they got the ick from a guy was when he laid his head on my shoulder.
Huh.
That was called gender incongruent. They didn't think it was manly and they got the ick.
Wow.
Or did this traditional idea of what men are supposed to do.
I do that all the time.
Number two, maybe you do this too, Gabe, Shazamming a song while he was in a nightclub. So he hears a cool song, pulls out his phone, tries to figure out which song it is. That gave quite a few women the ick, which surprised. I was like, oh, I could see myself doing that. That'd be something I would do.
Well, yeah, as a natural born journalist to figure things out.
A natural born journalist. Number three on the list, saying, wow, without me, whenever I would tell him that I did anything.
Oh, got it.
Right? Pretty annoying.
Ick.
Next one on the list was he wore jorts.
I don't know what those are.
I like the word. He wore jorts, which is a fashion
jean
faux pas.
Shorts or
jean
what?
Shorts.
Okay, got
that
it.
Gave him the ick. He loudly shushed another girl, and that's a clear sign of misogynism, right? That one gave like a small sign that, ugh, something, just that little action, something's really wrong. The last one I'll mention, because Gabe, I think you should be aware of this.
Uh-oh.
Seeing his butt crack when he bent over gave them the ick. So watch out for that, because I've seen yours quite a bit. It doesn't give me the ick, for the future.
Oh boy.
Now, men, when did men get the ick? When they've discovered that the person they were into or possibly dating was into astrology. To be clear, we're not talking astronomy. Astronomy is celestial objects.
I was gonna say, okay.
As a science. Astrology is when you believe that stars that are light years away and planets, which are hundreds of millions of kilometers away, are affecting my mood and my prospects on luck. That's astrology. Guys are not into that. It gives them the ick.
Horoscopes and stuff like that.
Yeah. Another one. I thought this was unfair. Two of them were unfair. Girls tripping like, I think physically tripping, falling down, that gave them the ick.
Huh.
And another one, totally unfair, her feet didn't reach the floor, physical appearance. So I think she's shorter.
Too short.
Yeah, I thought both of those were awful.
That's ick.
Yeah, that's ick to be feeling that way. When women use weird slang, or when she spits her gum in the trash like a guy, or adds cringy captions on her Instagram pictures, or wears too much makeup or fake tanner. Those gave guys the ick. So
now we know, Connor. We know.
No. Those are the actions that kind of lead to it. And then I'll just go through this quickly. Part two was about, okay, but who's feeling that? Because not everyone feels that the same way. Who is it that gets the ick?
Yeah.
There they went to surveys, 75 men, 50 women in the surveys. First of all, women are more likely to have experienced the ick. And that substantiates something that I felt. It felt like I was hearing it more from women. It was at a rate of 75% to 57%. Then what they did, and this is the most interesting part of the whole study, is they took that list that I just told you about of the things that give you the ick.
Mm-hmm.
And then they asked people, do you, on a scale of 1 to 5, do you feel that based on you see a guy's butt crack?
Mm-hmm.
Do you, is it a 1, not very ick, or is it a 5, like total ick, right? Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, there's a connection between the extent to which you feel that ick and your levels of disgust, narcissism, and perfectionism. The more...
What kinds of people based on personality? Okay.
Yes. The more you tend to feel disgust normally in day-to-day activities, the more you're going to feel this and at a higher rate. The same is true if you're a perfectionist, but this here they're saying perfectionism toward others, that you expect perfection.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. Obviously, they're going to be more grossed out or disgusted when they see this happening. Also true with narcissism, but not at the same frequency. There are some people who are going to experience this a lot more, and it limits their romantic possibilities. That's one of the chief findings. It may make it more difficult to find a mate, and it may, I'm quoting them, also lead to overly rigid rejection standards, and it may be connected to narcissism as well. It may be that if you're feeling this all the time, there's some stuff that you need to work on with yourself as you continue to, I don't know, navigate the dating scene. If you're interested in this study, it's very readable, very interesting, just published in the May Personality and Individual Differences Journal. It's called The Ick, Disgust, Sensitivity, Narcissism, and Perfectionism in Mate Choice Thresholds.
And maybe it gives you, Connor Dillon, some things to think about as to ways to better yourself. If my butt crack gives you the ick.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Oh, it doesn't?
No.
Okay.
So that, I think, and it brings me joy, actually, if I can say that. It's a sign that the world is still a funny place and funny things happen. It's the opposite, Gabe. It's the opposite. What gives all of you the ick? I would find that interesting. It's, again, an evolving definition, but finally, that's what the study does. Gives us something to work with. Is there anything on this list you think is unfair or that you agree with, disagree with? Let us know.
su@dw.com is our email.
Have you ever seen a meme? That's the question. I think for 99% of you, the answer has to be yes.
For that other 1%, it is an image with text on that image that is shared a lot.
That's it.
That's it.
That's the definition.
That's a meme.
We've seen them. They've informed us. They've made us laugh. They've made us kind of see things in a new way. They have an effect on us. Is it negative? Is it positive? What can memes do to us? That's the question we have today, and we're going to aim it at someone who has just published a paper on that question. Her name is Emily Godwin, and she's based in Bath, England.
Science Unscripted.
Hi, my name is Emily Godwin. I'm currently a PhD student at the University of Bath in the UK. And I researched the communication of conspiracy theories online, and I've recently published a study about memes.
What did your study on conspiracy theories and memes find primarily, Emily?
We found that memes used in conspiracy communities essentially help to stabilize the culture of those communities. And by that, I mean that they reinforce and strengthen their worldview and their shared worldview, that there are sort of underlying plots going on in the world around them.
Why are memes so good at binding me together with this group?
I would say that it's largely because memes are based on formats or structures that people might recognize. For example, you might go on a meme-making website and you can find all of these templates that have various different names. For example, a famous one is Distracted Boyfriend, for example. So people know what those memes are and they know the connotations behind them and what they are normally trying to show. So then when you attach sort of a conspiratorial idea to those memes, it goes back to the simplification thing. People can really easily understand what is meant to be said because they might already know what the meme format is and how it's meant to be used. And I would say that's one of the key things about a meme and its importance of spreading ideas is because you've got the shared understanding of the template already in place. And then when you view it, you very quickly understand what's being said there.
You're speaking my language because I made a meme and sent it to people on that website that you just mentioned. I did that a couple of days ago and I used, I don't know if you're
familiar. Hey, wait a minute, you didn't send this to me.
I'll send it. Well, it was in German. I sent it to German guys. Okay. It was the the Pablo Escobar meme format. It's
Yeah,
you know that one. Okay. He's in jailed or he's not allowed to leave the premises and so he's extremely bored. You have three frames. He's just looking. You know that feeling when you have nothing to do and you're staring? And that's all you can do. And then I wrote under that the week before the Super Bowl. And I sent it to the guys who watch NFL American football with me because that's what it feels like. You've got this 2-week break before the Super Bowl and Sunday, which is ritualized as a sports day for all of us. Suddenly, it's not there, and you're just staring out the window. You're not sure what to do with your time anymore in the evening. But I guess what's different about that stupid waste of everyone's time that I sent them is that it's apolitical. It does get political when you're talking about conspiracy theories. And that, I guess my question for you is, if a meme is political and you're consuming a lot of political memes, is it fair to say that there's a danger there? It's not linked to anything. There's no way to source the information. It's forming and shaping and reshaping your political opinions without any context. There must be a danger there.
Definitely, definitely. When memes are spread far and wide as well, like you say, without that context, there's no way to, I guess, control what the meme might mean to the people that view it. So if you've got a heavily politicized meme and it's spread across online social media networks or one of your friends or your family members are viewing those kinds of memes over and over again on their own community networks, there can be a danger there for sure. It sort of embeds a certain understanding, I suppose, over time, especially if they're viewing lots and lots of them.
We're not going to change the minds of conspiracy theorists. It's just not going to happen. So would a tip here be for people who aren't there yet to watch out with memes, or how far would you go with regard to the danger of these things?
I guess that is one way to put it. I suppose being more mindful that memes aren't just jokes or inside jokes or something that's silly and funny and not at all problematic. I suppose that's the first step, just to know and to understand, because I suppose lots of people realize now that discourse and text, being posted online, that can be dangerous. People can say things that aren't very nice, but they might not be so aware that imagery and memes can do a similar kind of thing, and oftentimes maybe even more efficiently and more quickly. Just being mindful that memes can encapsulate quite harmful ideas is one good first step, I would say.
As someone who himself looks at a decent number of memes. They're funny, they're entertaining, they sometimes cause you to see the world in a different way, in a good way. Still, there must be some data somewhere, perhaps you have access to it, perhaps you've read it, that shows it can't be as good to spend your time looking at tons of memes and to get a majority or a lot of your information from these oversimplified single line, multiple lines, one picture, as opposed to, I don't know, reading in-depth articles on the same subject matter that have been edited and re-edited by multiple trained professionals, right? That has to be a fact.
Definitely, definitely true. Yeah, I would argue that there is a danger in just consuming very short form mematic content. Any kind of short form content, I suppose, like short videos on TikTok that are informal, they can be really, really good sometimes, but it's not completely clear when they might not be. So it's better, I would say, to research or think about things using a variety of different kinds of sources. Definitely articles that you know that you can trust, that have been written, or academic papers that have been peer-reviewed, if you want to go that far. Just a real breadth of information, because although some videos and some images can be really informative, we know that simplified memes are perhaps a bit too simple to really get the nuance across on lots of different topics.
And that was Emily Godwin, a PhD researcher from Bath's Institute for Digital Security and Behavior.
And the only thing I'll say here at the end of this interview is, if you're going to dismiss memes for whatever reason, they are harder to make than you might think.
The reason we know that is, so my idea, Emily sent a nice email to us afterwards saying, hey, thanks for the nice chat. And I was going to send a thank you email back. And instead, I got distracted because I wanted to attach a meme to reference, sort of a meta reference to everything we've been doing that somehow encapsulated what we had all just talked about. And I wanted it to be funny.
You spent more than an hour trying to make that meme. I think you made more than one.
I had a meme with gorillas. I had a meme with clowns. I ditched them all. They were not funny. They're tough out there.
And you're normally a really funny guy. So if it's,
what was that tone? Well, I don't know. I had a tough time. Yeah, I don't know where they all come from. Nobody. They're just like from the internet. But I guess thank you to all the funny people out there making us laugh. And the last thing I'll say.
Well, hold on. The fact is, they're there and they can be dangerous, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's the message. Be aware of what they may be doing to you, and especially if there's a political connotation to them, take a step back, do the extra internet search to figure out, is this information based on facts or not? Don't be the one who shares it. Don't be the one who believes it automatically. Be skeptical, be cynical, and also appreciate the ones that are funny and make you laugh.
And send us your favorite meme right now to su@dw.com.
DW, made for minds.